Hey, you're listening to the Scholarly Spark podcast. Here's your chance to finally become interested in learning and find out about what you're genuinely curious about. Join me as we experience different foods, the latest technology, immerse ourselves in a variety of phenomenal cultures, discover the secrets of civilization, find out about interesting people we never knew existed, and learn about what no one else dared to find out. I'm Vasant Narayanan, taking you on a journey through the mysteries of our world, all through the convenience of your headphones. Here we go. In terms of caste components and interfaces to religious activity, Weber's study of Indian society was not of isolated importance. This was an area in which a number of philologists, sociologists, and religious studies specialists from the late 19th and early 20th centuries became interested, and often regarded Indian evidence as indicating a different system from the ones now familiar to European scholars. The studies of Emily Durkheim contributed, in the rituals of later history, to recognizing survival of previous societies. Its demarcation among beliefs and rituals was significant for subsequent Vedic sacrifice studies, as was also the centrality of religious deity and its lack in Buddhism. In particular, in attempts to distinguish the sacred from the profane, Marcel Mauss and H. Hubert analyzed the ritual of sacrifice in some detail. Mauss's gift-giving work has led him to examine the links between social and religious relations, and these studies have been centered on early Indian texts. Celestine Bougi asked if caste was unique to the Hindu society, or if it could be found in any other company. That led him to identify caste as more relevant to jatis, hereditary groups hierarchically formed with unfair rights, dividing themselves into taboo rules on marriage, food and customs, and resisting unity with others. This was another analysis that many Indologists consider the definition of caste as a varna or a ritual status, and as a Brahmin. Jati and varna had different roots, but did not annul each other. When European scholars became curious about Indian history in the late 18th century, their information sources were pretty much Brahmin, who maintained that Sanskrit works of ancient tradition were conserved that they alone knew. Thus, much of India's early history was nearly completely reconstructed from the Sanskrit texts and reflected their authors' views. Many of the works involved texts on religion or ritual manuals that color the interpretation of ancient Indian culture. Even texts with other concerns frequently had Brahmin writers and commentators, and therefore favored authority and adhered generally to Brahmanic social theories, whether or not they had broad historical applicability. As in texts such as the Dharmashastras, for example, caste referred to the varna distinctions, a ritual-style hierarchy creating a closed stratification of society, which was applied apparently from a young period and was then preserved almost untouched for centuries. In the view of the upper caste Brahmin authors, the lower castes were seen. However, the actual working of caste in Indian society allowed for variation in the local conditions which were rejected by the authors of the Dharmashastras. Curiously, the texts studied by Indologists were only integrated with the data collected by ethnographers. The information on Indian society was both considerable and varied. The distinction between civilized and primitive peoples presumably influenced bifurcation, which latter are said to lack literature. Those who studied oral traditions have been considered scholars of a different category. These traditions were seen as confined to Bardan people, lower castes, and the tribal and forest peoples, which, in comparison with texts of the higher castes and elite, were not reliable. The functioning of caste would have been regarded as rather different to the theories of the Dharmashastras, had both been regarded as aspects of the same societies. The use of evidence from various sources that later became prevalent represented a challenge to some aspects of textual studies, but was a corroboration to others, thus providing a more accurate and a less unilateral picture of the past. For example, evidence from contemporary inscriptions became more important, There's been a small interest in genealogy and local chronicles. James Todd collected information from bards and local stories of different Rajput clans. But it was not of more interest to collect bardic evidence or evaluate the roles of bards as authors of local history. Todd tended to filter the data through his own preconceptions about medieval European society and was one of those who, albeit superficial, drew parallels with European feudalism. He popularized the notion of the Rajputs as traditionally aristocratic, resisting Muslim domination, and ignoring the political alliances they had with Muslim leaders and marriage. L.P. Tessitore has made and tentatively analyzed genealogical collections, but they never enter traditional history. He also consulted and collected records from local bards in Rajasthan. We'll end here with Tessitore's work in recording local history. In the next episode, we'll see how non-Indians ended up significantly influencing the study and history of India. It's been super fun learning with you. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. Join me next week as we explore another part of the numerous and ever-increasing mysteries of our world. I'm looking forward to exploring something new that you've never heard about next week. Talk soon.